From the UW Marathon County Theater, welcome to the 7th District Congressional Debate between former Ashland County District Attorney Republican Sean Duffy and State Senator Julie Lassa, a Democrat from Stevens Point. I'm Glenn Moberg of Wisconsin Public Radio. This debate is also being brought to you by the Wausau Daily Herald, WAOW ABC TV 9, WSAW CBS TV 7, Kids Voting USA Wisconsin, and the Wisconsin Institute for Public Policy and Service. Thanks also to Dean Sandy Smith and the staff at UW Marathon County for making this event possible. Our panelists tonight are Robert Mentzer of the Wausau Daily Herald, Melissa Langben of WAOW TV, Eric Morotek of WSAW-TV, and Wausau East High School student Bill Grau of Kids Voting USA Wisconsin. The candidates will have opening and closing statements of 60 seconds each. During the debate, our panelists will pose the individual questions. The candidates will each have 90 seconds to respond to that question, at which point the panelist asks a follow-up. The candidates then have about 2 minutes and no more than 3 minutes to respond to the follow-up at the moderator's discretion. In a free-form discussion period in which the candidates can elaborate on their positions, question each other, and respond to each other's statements. During these discussion periods, I will intervene to keep things fair only if one candidate is using up all the time. So please, Sean and Julie, no filibusters tonight. When the rules of this debate were drawn up by the media partners back in June, we determined that candidates would be invited who had met a threshold of 15% support in public opinion polling. Sean Duffy and Julie Lassa are on the stage because only they have met that threshold. And now a round of applause, please, for our two candidates, Sean Duffy and Julie Lassa. And now that you have applauded, I'm going to ask you to do something difficult and refrain from applause until the end of the debate. By the toss of a coin, Sean Duffy has the first opening statement. Sean?
Glenn, first off, I want to thank our panel for being here today and all of our hosts for putting on tonight's event. All the listeners around the district who are tuning in tonight and all the folks that are here in the studio with us as well. Just by way of a brief introduction, I got in this race about 18 months ago when Congress passed a nearly $1 trillion stimulus bill. For me, I didn't believe that government borrowing and spending will lead to economic growth, prosperity, wealth, or sustainable jobs. I know that comes from the private sector, people who invest in their businesses and their ideas, and from there those businesses expand and grow, and that's how we create jobs in America. I want to be your next congressman because I believe that Wisconsin and America can prosper again. I want to go to Washington and work to implement pro-growth policies that will kickstart our economy and bring jobs back here to Wisconsin to put our hard-working families back to work. I look forward to the discussion tonight. Thank you very much.
And Julie Lassa, you have 60 seconds.
Thank you. Well, thank you, Glenn, and to the panel tonight. And again, all of you who are physically in the audience here and listening to us on the broadcast. But my name is Julie Lassa, and I grew up on a small dairy farm not so far from here in northern Portage County. And the people of this district, we work hard, we play by the rules, and all we expect is to be treated fairly by our government. And the reason why I got into this race is because I believe that we need to make sure that it's middle-class workers and their families who are at the top of the priorities list out in Washington, D.C. It's not the special interests who have been asking for special favors because they have the deepest pockets and the loudest voices. I want to make sure that it is our middle-class workers and their families who are the top priority, and that's why I believe that we really need to be focusing on strengthening the middle class in order to make sure that we have a strong national economy.
And we go to our first question from Robert Mentzer of the Wausau Daily Herald. Rob?
Thanks. Both of you have said that cutting the federal deficit is a priority. And in recent history, we do have a model of successful deficit reduction. And that was the agreement in 1990 between President George H.W. Bush and congressional Democrats that included a mixture of tax increases and spending reductions. That agreement has become unpopular now, but it's clear that it did play a real role in eliminating the deficit in the 1990s. In Congress, would you be open to an approach to deficit reduction that included both significant spending cuts and some tax increases?
We go first to Sean Duffy, then Julie Lassa. You each have 90 seconds.
Okay, and I forgot to say it's good to be here with you too, Senator Lassa. I apologize for that.
You too.
Yeah, you know what? I believe we have a spending problem in Washington. And we came out with a six-point plan to reduce our deficit. It's on my website, duffyforcongress.com. But a couple of those things that we're talking about is, you know, one, I believe that we need to send back all unspent TARP and stimulus money. Second, I think that since 2008, we have raised non-defense discretionary spending by 84%. I think we need to go back to 2008 levels. A lot of people don't know this, but this year we didn't pass the federal budget. And budgets work for our families, they work for our businesses, and they work for our federal government. I want to go to Washington and work on passing a budget so we can prioritize our spending and we can see what those top priorities are and see where we can cut. And I think if we do that, that'll go a long way towards bringing us towards fiscal responsibility. But at a point where we're in a recessionary time where we're struggling to find jobs, I don't think the answer is raising taxes. The Congressional Budget Office came out and said that if we allow taxes to increase in 2 months across the board, we are going to see 1.2 million jobs lost. At a time when our families are struggling and they want to go back to work, we have unemployment hovering around 10%. That's not an option that I think we have. Let's put Americans back to work. When Americans are working, they're paying taxes. And when they're paying taxes, we're working on reducing that deficit. That's what I think we need to do.
Senator Lassa, you have 90 seconds.
Thank you. Well, I believe that we need to have the federal government work just like our families do. In our family, just like in yours, we decide what our priorities are. And that is what we fund. I mean, the wants are nice, but they have to wait until we just have money in order to pay for it. And that's why I believe we really need to focus on making sure that we are just focusing on our priorities in this country, just like so many middle-class families are having to do in their own budgets right now and balancing their checkbooks and making a dollar stretch. You know, and this is where I really disagree with my opponent, is that, you know, I believe that we need to close the tax loopholes in order to help balance our budget for corporations who ship our good-paying jobs overseas. I think that it's absolutely crazy to ask American workers to work as hard as they do every day and pay their taxes just for the federal government to turn around and give their tax dollars to a corporation who then moves their job to China, India, Mexico, or some other country. I believe we need to close those tax loopholes and to create incentives for businesses to invest in America, in Wisconsin, and in our workers here, not in workers in China, India, Mexico, other places around the world.
And Rob Mentzer, you have a follow-up question.
Well, just to return to the question of deficit reduction, most economists agree that the deficit is a serious problem, but most also consider it to be a medium-term or even a long-term problem for America. You've both argued that it should be a priority now, even though we have persistent high unemployment now, and I guess I want to know why. Why now?
And this is a free-form discussion period. You have about 2 minutes.
Well, right now, Rob, I think we need to put people back to work. And we need to implement policies that are going to put people back to work. And raising taxes right now is not the answer. But if we put people back to work, we have a larger tax base to draw upon. And if we draw upon that tax base, we have more dollars in the Federal Reserve or into the Fed, which will allow us to then reduce our deficit.
Right. And, you know, I believe that we really do need to focus on, you know, creating incentives for businesses who are investing in American workers. And that's how we're going to help turn this economy around, by investing in small businesses, Main Street businesses. But I also believe that for the long-term health of this country and our economy, we need to get serious about balancing the budget. And that's why I've called on members of Congress, you know, to not take any pay raises until we have a balanced budget, that they take a 10% pay cut until unemployment is reduced, and that we really get serious about balancing the budget. It's hard to do that if my opponent, is proposing, you know, extending tax breaks for millionaires and billionaires. That's going to add another $700 billion to our federal budget that we'll have to be borrowing from China, and I just believe that is the wrong way to go.
Well, if I could respond to that as well. Senator Lassa sits on the State Budget Writing Committee, and as we all know, we're going to have a budget deficit next year of $2.7 to $3 billion here in the state of Wisconsin. And it's because of these budget policies and tax increases that we have here in the state of Wisconsin that are driving businesses out of our great state. And she talks about tax loopholes. The bottom line is I signed a pledge that we would have no net new tax increases. That doesn't mean we can't modify our tax code. But this is a pledge that she talks about that has been called false, this claim that I want to ship jobs overseas. I want to stimulate our economy and give great-paying jobs to our folks right here in Wisconsin. I don't want to ship any jobs overseas.
Well, and Glenn, if I could continue on. I mean, we made difficult decisions in the budget, and we did balance it. It's hard now to be able to be going through this global recession and trying to get this economy moving again, not only here in Wisconsin but across the nation. But, you know, those tax loopholes are something that my opponent supports. It's in his budget plan or his jobs plan or his so-called jobs plan, I should say.
Well, we will come back to this topic later. Let's go to Melissa Langman. She's got the next question.
Thank you very much, Glenn. Thomas Donahue, the president of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, defends the outsourcing of American jobs to other countries, saying, quote, outsourcing has made the manufacturing process more efficient and productive, which has helped consumers and the overall economy. Mr. Duffy, the Chamber of Commerce is running ads supporting your candidacy. Do you agree that outsourcing American jobs to other countries can be a good thing? And, Senator Lassa, if you want to crack down on outsourcing, won't that hurt American companies who rely on exports to compete in a global economy?
And we start with Senator Lassa, then we go to Mr. Duffy. You each have 90 seconds.
Well, I believe that, you know, outsourcing is what is helping to kill the middle class and our workers in this country. I don't believe that we should continue the failed policies out in Washington, D.C. that give tax breaks to corporations who move American jobs overseas. I mean, people here in this country, in this state, in order to buy the products that those companies are manufacturing, they need to have a good job that pays them a decent wage so that they can actually afford to buy those products. That's why I believe we need to close those tax loopholes to make sure that corporations aren't moving our good-paying jobs overseas and that it's not being facilitated by the federal government. I believe that we need to make sure that we're cracking down and getting tough on China, stopping their manipulation of their currency, because that makes our exports from this country much more expensive in their country, and the reverse here, where their products that they're sending over here are so much cheaper and it's harder for us to compete. But I also believe that we need to get tough on them because they are dumping products in this country, like paper products, and being able to undercut our manufacturers. You know, and it is very hard for our American businesses and American workers to be able to compete when they're selling products in this country for less than what they can even manufacture them for over in China.
Mr. Duffy, you have 90 seconds.
Sure. Senator Lassa likes to talk about failed policies in Washington, D.C. The last time I checked, the Democrats were in charge of everything in Washington, D.C., from the presidency, the House, and the Senate. And it's her party's policies and the policies that she supports that are killing jobs across this country. Senator Lassa voted to increase taxes and fees last year by $5 billion. And the bottom line is when we go into the budget process next year, Wisconsin has a nearly $3 billion budget deficit. And when you look at what these policies have done to jobs in Wisconsin, some jobs are being exported to other countries. But the bottom line is there's a lot of jobs in Wisconsin that are being exported to other states because the policies that Senator Lassa has advocated for have made it more difficult for those companies to compete here in Wisconsin. We've just heard, you know, Fiskars is leaving central Wisconsin. Federal Mogul is leaving federal Wisconsin. Jerns, down in Stevens Point, they're going to go to North Carolina. The Thomas Company down in Sheboygan is leaving Wisconsin. These are because of policies that Senator Lassa has advocated for that have made Wisconsin less competitive, which means we've lost good-paying jobs. Now, no one here says that Senator Lassa is responsible for a global recession, but she is the chair of Wisconsin's Economic Development Committee, and she is responsible for the policies that we have in this state that are driving our good-paying middle-class jobs out and outsourcing them to other states in this great country.
Melissa Langman, you've got a follow-up?
Maybe.
The follow-up question is, the American labor movement has fought for work safety standards, tough environmental regulations, a minimum wage, health benefits, and pension plans. If American companies are forced to compete against foreign companies that don't meet those same standards and that can produce products cheaply because they exploit their workers, aren't we undermining the high wages and quality of life enjoyed by the American middle class?
And this is a two-minute open discussion period, whichever one wants to go first.
Right. Well, I believe, Melissa, you're exactly right on that. I mean, the way that our trade system is structured, whether it's NAFTA or some of the other trade agreements, is that our American businesses and our American workers are not able to compete on a level playing field. Provisions of NAFTA are not being enforced with Mexico, where they can pay their workers 80 cents an hour and not have to worry about any type of worker protection or environmental standards whatsoever. And that's, you know, it is hard for our American businesses and Wisconsin businesses and our workers to be able to compete when the playing field is not level. And the deck has really been stacked against us. And that's why I believe that we really need to make sure that we are upholding provisions within NAFTA so that we can protect our workers, protect our businesses, and making sure that they can compete fairly. Because the fact is that I have full confidence in the ability of our businesses and our workers to be able to outcompete anyone in this world. But the fact is that they can't do that if the deck is stacked against them.
Mr. Duffy?
We live in a global economy. We are competing against China, India, Mexico, Vietnam, and I believe that we can compete and we can win. And we can pay our employees a heck of a lot more than they do in other countries because we're harder working, we're more productive, and we're smarter. But the bottom line is we can't do it if we overtax, overmandate, and overregulate our businesses here in America. We have the second highest corporate tax rate in the industrialized world right here in America. It makes it incredibly difficult to compete when you have all of these things taking place. I mean, our American businesses, if you tie two hands and a foot behind their back, can't compete. But if we set them free, I fully believe that the American worker can excel, can exceed, and in this global competition, we can win.
Well, and I just want to go back to the previous question that Melissa had. You know, I think that it's important to point out that my opponent sent out a fundraising letter to his supporters, you know, trying to raise money off of the fact that he was opposed to the bill that closed tax loopholes for corporations who moved, you know, who move our good-paying jobs out of this country. And in terms of Fiskars, you know, they moved to China and Mexico. Federal Mogul, they moved to another location here in Wisconsin. And I just think that we need to make sure that we are doing everything that we can in order to be able to move our businesses and our workers forward. And that means creating a pro-business, pro-worker environment where we are giving incentives to small and mid-sized businesses so that they will hire people, that we help streamline the process so that they can export more easily overseas.
And if I could respond, Glenn.
Very quickly, Sean.
Well, just ask for equal time. The bottom line is we have the seventh worst environment to do business in the country, per Forbes. And Senator Lassa talks about pro-growth, pro-business policies. The largest small business organization in the state, the NFIB, has given Senator Lassa a zero rating, which means she's voted with small businesses 0% of the time as a state senator here. The bottom line is when you're passing out bills and laws that make it more difficult to do business here in Wisconsin, the bottom line is these companies pack up and they go somewhere else. You can't say I'm pro job when you're not pro employer. That doesn't work.
We're going to have to wrap this up and go on to the next question. Eric Morotek.
Turning now to health care, the man one of you will replace, Dave Obey, sounded the hammer, signaling the passage of the bill that sent health care reform to the president, made it a reality for the nation. Still, the debate over the merits of the bill continues, so where do you stand? Do you believe it should be kept, should be changed, or should we just repeal it?
Sean Duffy, then Julie Lassa. You have 90 seconds.
This has to be a bill that works, and I don't think this one does. So I would support either reforming the reform, or if we had a bill that was going to work, repeal and replace. I'll support wherever we can go to make this thing work. The bottom line is we need to have a piece of legislation that's going to reduce cost and increase access. This bill doesn't do it. I think what we're doing is changing who's paying for the care, but not fundamentally addressing the root cause of why prices are going up year over year. As a starting point, I think we need to make sure that we have tort reform. We need to have our insurance companies be able to compete across state lines. We need to be able to pool our resources so we have more buying power against insurance companies. We need to make sure we do away with lifetime caps. Those who have pre-existing conditions need to be able to buy health insurance. And the bottom line, too, is we need price transparency. We need to know what a service is going to cost so we can shop on price and service. But I don't think the way is what Senator Lassa has proposed, which is a single-payer government-run health care system, which she voted for here in the state of Wisconsin, a single-payer government-run system where we are going to be giving the keys of our health care over to a bureaucrat in Washington, D.C. We need to reform the system and keep those keys with our family members. This was going to be paid for by way of a 12% payroll tax. And if you want to see more jobs driven out of this state, add a 12% payroll tax onto the taxes that we already pay, and we would see more job losses to other states in the country.
Senator Lassa, you have 90 seconds.
All right, and I'm going to jump back to that last question and then answer the health care reform. But the fact is, you know, I've received awards from NFIB, Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce. I used to be the executive director for a small business association known as the Plover Area Business Association. So, you know, I have close ties to the small business community and understand, you know, what we need to do in order to make sure that we're helping create jobs within the small business community. Now, in terms of healthcare, you know, I just remember when I graduated from college and I was kicked off of my parents' health insurance plan. And I had a cavity and I needed to go get it filled. When I went to the dentist's office, I had enough money to get it filled, but not to pay for the Novocaine and the pain medication with the procedure. And it was one of the most difficult things I've ever had to go through. But I know that there are people in this state who are making even more difficult decisions than what I had to make in the dentist's office that day. And that's why with the health care reform law, I believe that, you know, we have there are some good provisions in it. You know, children with pre-existing conditions can now get coverage. You know, health insurance companies can't kick you off if you get sick. But I'm concerned about the mandates piece because I think it is unfair to require individuals and families to have health insurance if they can't afford it.
And Eric Morotek, you have a follow-up?
I guess we've touched on it a little bit here, but I'd like to hear a little bit more. Specifically, what would you like to see changed or tweaked? What's going to be your main thing when you get into office and you begin working on health care? What's the one big thing you want to see addressed?
And the two of you have 2 minutes.
I would say price transparency. I have a story right when we had our second child. I went to the doctor's office and asked, what does it cost to have the baby? I didn't have health insurance. And they told me, I don't know. And I said, well, I know babies can be complicated, but standard birth, 2 days in the hospital, how much? And he said, I don't know. I said, well, okay, well, what's the range it's going to cost me to have the baby in the hospital? He couldn't give me a price. So how was I able to shop price and service if I couldn't find out what it was going to cost to have the child in the hospital? So I do think we need to be able to have price transparency so folks can shop on price and service. My concern is, you know, that Senator Lassa's program that she voted for, the single-payer government-run system, has mandates, and the program that's been passed, which some refer to as Obamacare, that too has mandates. I don't want to see health care mandates come on folks here in Wisconsin or across the country.
Well, what you're saying is just not true. The fact is that we really need to make sure that we're taking care of folks who are out there. I just remember when I was at St. Joseph's Hospital and there was a gentleman whose son was also in the ICU, just like my daughter. And he was 3 years old, had choked, and the item had gone down into his lungs. They had med-flighted him from his home to Marshfield, and he was looking at a $30,000 bill. And he was talking to me in the waiting room, and he said he wasn't sure how he was going to pay it. And I just can't see going back and, you know, repealing this healthcare reform law and putting people back into that same position where they don't know how they're going to pay their health bills. Yes, we're going to have to make sure that as this healthcare reform law moves forward, that when the rules are put in place, that it's done correctly and that there is more accountability and transparency and that we do what we can to drive down costs and making sure that we're utilizing best practices, that there are incentives for medical providers to provide good care.
All right, I've got to keep the train rolling here. We're running behind time. Sean, you can come back to that if you want. Bill Grau, you've got the next question.
All right, thank you, Glenn. Social Security has been referred to by many as America's promise to its workers. However, recent estimates reveal that the current system, if left unreformed, will only be able to pay American workers full benefits until the year 2037. As an 18-year-old, I'm not eligible to receive Social Security until the year 2052, an entire 15 years after its funds are projected to dry up. Senator Lassa, you continue to claim that Mr. Duffy wants to privatize Social Security, even though he denies it. Why not take him at his word? And Mr. Duffy, if you don't want to privatize Social Security, why are you praising Congressman Paul Ryan's economic blueprint when privatization is a major part of it?
Senator Lassa, and then Mr. Duffy, you each have 90 seconds.
Sure. Well, in terms of Social Security, I think that it is a very important program. We have a million people in this state who rely on their Social Security benefits. They're just like my grandmother, who, you know, until she passed away the last summer, her Social Security check was what she solely relied on to live on. And I just think that we need to make sure that we protect and preserve Social Security not only for our current retirees, but our future retirees as well. The workers who are currently, you know, paying into the system with each and every paycheck, and that it is a contract between the federal government and the workforce. You know, Mr. Duffy has said, whether it was at UWSP talking to the College Republicans, that he supports in Congressman Paul Ryan's budget plan that included privatization of Social Security and turning Medicare into a voucher program. He also said in Mike Gushay's show in May, when he was asked specifically about Social Security and Medicare, he said that, you know, Congressman Paul Ryan's budget plan had some good ideas related to Social Security and Medicare. So, you know, depending on which group he's talking to, because I was here not too long ago with him at a senior and disability forum, he said he was opposed to privatization. I mean, it's hard to know where he stands because depending on who he's talking to, his stance on that issue changes.
Mr. Duffy, you have 90 seconds.
The Social Security in 2037 is going to experience a 22% cut, which means that those who are retiring roughly in their early 60s today are going to have a 22% cut when they get to be in their 80s. And most our folks in their 80s, that's when they need these dollars the most. A third of our citizens rely on solely their Social Security for payment. So we need to reform this system. But Senator Lassa continues with this attack on Social Security. The Wausau Daily Herald said that this attack was misleading and it should be dropped. The Milwaukee Journal Sentinel called it liar, liar, pants on fire. But she does not stop. She talks about the University of Wisconsin, Stevens Point. What actually transpired is she had a college Democrat come up and ask me the question if I support Paul Ryan's budget plan. And I said, I think it's a good starting point. And they said, so you support it? And I said, yeah, as a starting point. So she's trying to get me to say that I support privatization, which is absolutely false. Every time I talk about it, I'll say, no, I don't support privatization. But this is a national plan that she's buying into is a claim for privatization. Absolutely don't want to do it. I want to shore up the system to make sure that our seniors have Social Security the way it is today. But I want to make sure we shore it up for my generation so we have benefits when we get to the age of retirement. I said Paul Ryan's plan was a good starting point because, one, he has a program to shore the system up. He's starting the conversation. And one component that he has is means testing, which is what I've been talking about on how we're going to make this thing work with the numbers.
Bill Grau, you have a follow-up?
All right. If privatization is off the table, what actions are you willing to take to keep Social Security solvent? Are you willing to raise the retirement age, cut benefits, or raise the cap on payroll taxes so millionaires pay the same percent of their income for Social Security that minimum wage workers do. What specifically would you do to ensure that my generation receives its fair share of the American promise?
And the two of you have 2 minutes.
Well, I'm going to jump in on this. You know, it's not just me that's saying this. Politico and Wausau City Pages have also said that my opponent has changed his tune on privatization of Social Security. I mean, I'm very proud to have the endorsement of the National Committee to Preserve and Protect Social Security and Medicare, because they recognize my commitment not only to our current retirees, but our future generations of individuals who will be participating in Social Security and Medicare as well. I don't believe that we should be increasing the age of retirement. You know, at a certain point, especially with people who do heavy type of manual labor, your body just gives out. You're not going to be able to do some of the same things you were able to do in your 30s, 40s, and 50s as you are if we were to raise the Social Security age up, because at a certain point, people's bodies just can't take it anymore. I think that in terms of means testing, all you'd be doing is turning Social Security into a welfare program. I believe that if you pay into the system, you should be able to get what you've paid into it out.
Let's let Mr. Duffy respond here.
Sure. Means testing is basically what we're talking about for our seniors today. Their program doesn't change. Those who are about to retire, the program doesn't change. This is a program that's going to be modified for my generation. And what we're talking about is dollars that when you put money into Social Security, how is your benefit going to be calculated? Right now, it's calculated by way of wage growth, which is about 4.1%. If those top earners have their return on their Social Security investment at the price growth or inflation growth, that's 3.1%. That'll bring us a long way towards solvency. Senator Lassa, on the other hand, she has a program to say, listen, let's, one, raise taxes, which is her answer for everything, or two, she said, let's stop raiding the trust fund. That would have been a great answer 20 years ago, but the trust fund has been raided. It's full of IOUs, and there's less money coming in this year than is going out. So that program doesn't work, and she doesn't have a plan to shore up the system, but she does have a plan to sit there and spew misinformation about my program and plan.
We're going to move on to the next question, and I will ask it, and because we're running behind time, there will not be a free form discussion period after the question. Mr. Duffy, you've been endorsed by Wisconsin Right to Life. You've said you want to outlaw all abortions, even in the cases of rape and incest. Senator Lassa, your campaign has been supported by Emily's List, which is a national abortion rights organization. Is there any compromise possible on this divisive issue? Senator Lassa, are you willing to allow abortions all the way into the third trimester up to the point of birth? And Mr. Duffy, are you willing to make any exceptions, or would you really force a woman who had been raped to bear the child of her rapist? We'll start with Mr. Duffy, then Senator Lassa. You each have 90 seconds.
Yeah, I'm 100% pro-life. I believe that life begins at conception through natural death. And I think that's one of the differences that Senator Lassa and I have during the course of this campaign. A lot of folks have been receiving literature that comes in by way of the name womensvote.org, but it's actually literature from Emily's List, and it's pretty despicable literature that comes in support of Senator Lassa that misrepresents my record. And, I'm 100% pro-life, and I know that Senator Lassa is, through Emily's List, one who supports, abortion on demand and late-term abortions. And for me, I think that's wrong.
So you would force that woman to have the child of a rapist?
Glenn, I've answered the question. I'm 100% pro-life. I believe that life begins at conception.
Senator Lassa, you have 90 seconds.
Well, thank you very much. I do think that there is room, a lot of room, for agreement between individuals who are pro-life and those who are pro-choice. We need to do everything that we can to make sure that unintended pregnancies, we reduce the number. That is by parents making sure that they're talking to their children about their values and beliefs, making sure that they understand the values that the parents believe in, making sure that we're doing what we can so that unintended pregnancies don't happen in the first place. But I'm a pro-woman person. I believe that a woman who is in this position should be talking to her family, her doctor, and those who are close to her, and that we keep abortion in this country safe, legal, and most of all, rare.
The question again was, would you allow abortion into the third trimester up to the point of birth if necessary?
I believe that the current law should stand and that we should do everything that we can. I'm a mother of two young girls. I believe that it's important for my husband and I to pass along our values, that abstinence before marriage is what is preferred, but also that we do what we can to reduce unintended
pregnancies. Sounds like the answers to both questions were yes. Let's move on to Robert Menzer, and you have the next question.
Let's turn now to foreign policy. Among others, Senator Russ Feingold has argued that while we're fighting in Afghanistan, al-Qaeda has largely moved on from Afghanistan into Pakistan and other nations in the Middle East and in Africa. In 2010, do you believe that Afghanistan is still a central front in the war on terror? Do you agree or disagree with President Obama's decision to send tens of thousands of additional troops there?
And this time we are starting with Senator Lassa and then Mr. Duffy.
Well, you know, I grew up in a military family. My dad and my brother both served. And I believe that with our troops being over in a war zone in Afghanistan, we need to make sure that we give them all the supplies and what they need to stay as safe as they possibly can in a war zone. But I believe that we need to bring them home as quickly and as safely as we possibly can in meeting the timeline that has been set by President Obama. And that we continue to listen to our General Petraeus and as well as our other military leaders who are on the ground every day in Afghanistan and seeing what is happening. But the fact is we need to make sure that, you know, our nation's security and the safety of our people also takes a priority. But when we do bring the troops home, I believe that we need to make sure that they're getting the best health care that they possibly can get. We need to make sure that we are reintegrating them into a civilian life as easily as possible by, you know, extending tax cuts to businesses who hire veterans and creating within the Small Business Administration a special division that is solely devoted to helping veterans if they're interested in becoming entrepreneurs and starting their own small business. But to me, that is very important.
And Mr. Duffy, you have 90 seconds.
First off, I struggle with what the objective is in Afghanistan. I don't know that it's been very clear. And so what I'll tell you is this. If there was an objective in Afghanistan, I'll tell you what I think it should be, and that is to make sure there are no terrorist camps where they can train terrorists and send them to America and kill U.S. citizens. Once that's accomplished, we should bring our men and women home as quickly as possible. We should give our generals every tool, every resource they need to accomplish that goal as quickly as possible so we can get our men and women home as quickly as possible. And when they come home, we have a great obligation to care for our veterans. I think so often as I travel this district and have an opportunity to speak with our veterans, so often they feel like they've given and they have given so much to our country. And now that they're back home, our government hasn't always met the obligations that they have to our great veterans. And as the next congressman here, I'm going to go to Washington and advocate to make sure that we have the resources available to take care of those who have served this country so bravely. In regard to timelines in Afghanistan, I want to set objectives. Let's have an objective, let's accomplish it, and let's come home winners. I don't want to have random and arbitrary timetables that are going to say if we just get to this date, let's come home. If that's what we're going to do, man, let's just bring the troops home right now. Or let's set an objective, accomplish it, and come home as quickly as possible.
Thank you. Rob Menzer, you have a follow-up?
Yes, as the war on terror has played out abroad, there's also an argument about which domestic policies are best to combat terrorism at home. Officials in the Obama administration have just recently have called for new laws strengthening the government's ability to wiretap phones and to monitor online activity. Do you agree that broader surveillance authority is needed, and how do you make that judgment?
And the two of you have 2 minutes.
Yeah, I believe we need to have a balance, Rob, where we give our government tools to make sure that they can find, you know, terrorists who are plotting to kill U.S. citizens. But I also am very concerned that the government has too much power, and I don't want to see our government eavesdropping on all of us in this room or those who are listening to us who are law-abiding citizens. And I guess I don't know all the ins and outs of what's taking place within the, you know, FBI or CIA. So to give you a good answer on that, I can't. But I do think there needs to be balance where citizens are protected, but tools are given to make sure we can protect U.S. citizens from the next potential terrorist attack.
And you know, I believe that we need to make sure that we're doing everything that we can to prevent terrorist strikes from hitting here on American soil or targeting Americans in places around the world. And, you know, I believe that we have to strike that careful balance of protecting, you know, public and national security, but also in preserving individual liberty, because I just I think that it's very important that we do strike that balance and that we do have a judicial process that's in place so that there are others who are involved in the judiciary who are looking at whatever information is there with a critical eye in making those type of determinations on whether a warrant should be issued or not.
Let's move on to Melissa Langbin. You've got the next question.
Our next question deals with immigration and agriculture. According to a study by the UW-Madison Program on Agricultural Technology Studies, immigrants now make up about 40% of the state's dairy labor force. Further, many of them are here illegally. Many farmers, though, say that they do rely on the immigrant workers so that they can stay afloat, particularly during these tough economic times. However, they don't want to get in trouble with the law either. How do you plan to tackle immigration reform without driving Wisconsin's dairy farmers out of business?
Mr. Duffy first, then Senator Lassa.
First off, I believe we need to secure our southern border, and I believe we need to do that by way of building a wall and then using technology to police it to make sure no one's coming across that border. My concern isn't just illegal immigration. My concern is if there is a dirty bomb that comes into this country, it'll come across that border. And more recently, we hear about our drug cartels and the drug trade and the human trafficking that goes on across that southern border. We need to secure it to make sure we know who is coming into this country. Once we get near full employment, I have no objection to having a work visa program to allow folks to come into this country legally to work. But the bottom line is I don't think we want to incentivize folks to come in to America and work and take advantage of the great resources that this country provides if they are doing it by way of breaking our law. And that's one of the great differences that Senator Lassa and I have. She voted to allow illegal immigrants to get in-state tuition here in Wisconsin. And what that does is it takes away a position of one of our young Wisconsin students who will not have a position in our university system and take away funding from a Wisconsin student. She's also voted to allow illegals to get licenses here in Wisconsin. That's encouraging folks who haven't come into this country legally to come to Wisconsin. I don't think that's the right answer. But frankly, I think our farmers are going to have to tap into the workforce that we have here in Wisconsin that is here legally, though it may be a migrant workforce.
Senator Lassa, you have 90 seconds.
Thank you. Well, I've talked to people all across this district, especially those who have been unemployed for a long period of time or those who have just lost their jobs. And they are concerned that there are businesses in this state who, rather than hiring an American citizen, are hiring an illegal worker to do the type of work that's being done. And, you know, I just believe that we need to secure our borders. We need to know who's here. Not only is it a matter of economic security, but it's a matter of national security as well. For those businesses who are knowingly hiring illegal workers, I believe that they should be penalized for doing that. And for illegal immigrants who are here, I mean, they should have to pay a fine, pay their back taxes, and then because they broke the law, they need to go to the end of the line and follow the current laws that we have in place. And the fact is that, I mean, the reason why we are having such a national discussion now about immigration and its impact is because the federal government has really failed to deal with immigration in any type of meaningful way, and why you have states now doing different things like Arizona and such. But I just believe that we need to make sure that we at the federal level get serious about immigration and figuring out a common sense way to solve this problem.
And Melissa, you've got a follow-up question.
We've heard about some of the things that you don't want to see. What kinds of policies will you support, though, to keep Wisconsin farmers competitive with other producers?
And so this is a question on agriculture. You've got 2 minutes.
It's a broader agriculture question, and we have to recognize that Wisconsin dairy agriculture is a $60 billion a year business. 1 in 10 Wisconsin workers work in some industry related to agriculture. And if you look at everyone around this world, 96% of all consumers live outside of America, and they all need to eat. We have a great resource here in Wisconsin that we can export. I think we have to do a better job of exporting our great Wisconsin products, whether it's, you know, our dairy products or our cranberries or other products that we grow here in Wisconsin. And I think we need to find other markets and other ways to market our great Wisconsin products. And just to note on that, for every $1 billion of export, we create roughly 9,000 jobs. So I think we truly have a great resource here that can create jobs and a driving force in our economy if we're effective in marketing our Wisconsin dairy products.
Great. Well, that is a great question, because the fact is that agriculture makes up, you know, 10% of the workforce in the state is employed by agriculture. And it is an industry that, you know, we have relied on in the past, and we have to make sure that it thrives in the future. And that's why I believe that, you know, in order to help our dairy farmers, we have to stop the importation of what's called milk protein concentrates, because that is driving down the prices for our small family farmers and others. We need to make sure that we're getting, for the sake of our ginseng farmers, which is world-renowned for our quality of ginseng in this state, we have to make sure that we're cracking down on those who sell imitation Wisconsin ginseng. But we really do have to get serious in terms of really helping our farmers, and that's why I've, you know, been proud to work with them on initiatives like Buy Local, Buy Wisconsin, getting more fresh fruit and vegetables into the schools as well.
And Eric Morotek, you have the next question.
I'm going to change things up a little bit here. Just interesting to note that Congressman Dave Obey began serving in Washington before either of you were born. 17 years prior to him, Mel Laird represented the district, a Republican. Needless to say, the 7th District has become used to having long-term statesmen with many years of experience. So no matter who wins, we're going to be sending a freshman representative to Congress. So, as the proverbial new kid in school, how do you propose to get yourself noticed and, more importantly, make sure that your ideas and your proposals get the attention of senior members to push that legislation forward?
And we start with Senator Lassa.
Well, I think that, you know, it all comes down to hard work and being committed to the people of this district. I think that, you know, having 41 years in Congress, I mean, and the Appropriations Chair was certainly an achievement for Congressman Obey. But you know, what I think the next person, and hopefully with the voter support, I would hope that it would be me, but I think that we really need to make sure that we're focusing on getting the job done, working in a bipartisan manner. And, you know, when I was growing up on the farm, it didn't matter whose idea it was to solve a problem. All that it mattered was that the problem was solved. And that's what I think we need to do out in Washington. Right now you have the two parties yelling at each other and are more concerned about partisan politics than doing what's right for the American people. And it's the Democrats and the Republicans as both. And that's why I believe that, you know, we need some common sense solutions that will help to move this country forward. And that it doesn't matter to me if it's a Republican idea or a Democratic idea. All that matters is that it is a solution that moves this country and this state in the right direction. So between a combination of hard work, dedication, listening to people, and working in a bipartisan manner.
And Mr. Duffy, you've got 90 seconds.
And I think that sounds great, but in the over the last cycle in Madison, you voted with your party 99% of the time, which doesn't show a great record of bipartisanship. I think what we need to do is go to Washington and engage in the arena of ideas. We need to have strong ideas that are going to balance our budget, which is $13.7 trillion, work on policies that are pro-growth, that are going to kickstart the economy and create jobs. And I think as the new congressman from Wisconsin's 7th Congressional District, we have somewhat of a bullhorn. And we have to use that bullhorn to advocate for the people here in Wisconsin, our great workforce, our great industry, to bring folks back here. But if I'm so honored, I think I get to join a potentially a freshman class, whether it's, you know, 10, 20, 30 new members, that we can go out there and really work on bringing ideas to the table that are going to bring us towards fiscal responsibility. You know, for me, I have 6 children, and I look at the kind of an America that my kids are going to inherit. I'm concerned. We, you know, our children all have their portion of the national debt at $43,000. I mean, we are mortgaging their children's our children's future. We need to have the moral fortitude to go there and cut back and make sure that we balance our budget. And the bottom line is that hasn't happened in Wisconsin. Our budget has gone, under Senator Loss's leadership, from $58 billion up to $62 billion. We've had a $5 billion tax increase and fee increase, and we have a budget deficit of $3 billion. What's been wrong in Washington has also been wrong in Madison.
Eric, you have a follow-up?
I do. Given, again, the experience, the extension of having a long-serving representative is the ability to bring federal money back to the state. Highway 29 work here in Wausau, of course, is just perhaps the most recent example of that. So what specific efforts will you make to ensure that Wisconsin continues to get a fair share in federal dollars, and will that include earmarks?
And this is a two-minute discussion period.
I'm opposed to the earmark process the way it sits. I don't believe that we should have folks go in behind closed doors where the light of day doesn't shine and slide earmarks into bills where the public doesn't know what's happening. We might say this was great for Wisconsin, but the 7th Congressional District, but the bottom line is there was 434 other congressmen doing the same thing. That's why we have this budget problem. But that doesn't mean that we don't have federal dollars coming back to Wisconsin. Let's put programs into the budget that we believe are good programs. We can put them on the House floor. We can debate them. The light of day can shine on them, and everyone here across the country can see what we believe is good funding, not only in Wisconsin, a good program also in California or Mississippi. But if we get to see it, I think we're going to have better government, more transparent government, and also an advocate who can still bring the dollars back, but in a way that everyone sees what's happening.
Great. Well, thanks, Glenn. you know, I just want to jump back to the last question that Eric asked. The fact is that we made difficult decisions in the legislature. We actually cut the budget, not increased it. And the fact is that, you know, we need to get our budget deficits under control at the federal level. And that's why during this campaign, not only have I called for contracting reform, getting rid of, you know, single bid, no bid contracts, but also getting rid of the earmark process, because I believe that we need to make sure that there's more accountability and transparency in how taxpayer money is being used, and that every project needs to stand on its own merits. I think that is what taxpayers expect, and that is what should happen in this entire process. But the fact is, you know, my opponent talks about mortgaging, you know, future generations' future. But the fact is with him supporting the I'll jump back in a bit.
All right. We have Bill Grau with the final question.
One of Barack Obama's major promises upon arriving at the White House was that he would usher in a new era of bipartisanship in American politics. If there is one thing both parties can agree on, it is that this measure has failed. Partisanship is worse than ever in Washington, and quite frankly, the American people are sick of it. Who is to blame for this partisanship, and what personally would each of you do to create a more bipartisan environment in the House?
And Bill, why don't you ask your follow-up, because we won't have time for the discussion period here.
As a follow-up, I would like each of you to name one issue that you would be willing to break party lines on.
All right, Mr. Duffy, you have 90 seconds, and then Senator Lassa.
And First of all, I'm going to go back to the last question. Senator Alassa says she balanced the budget. The bottom line is she cut the budget. She didn't cut the budget. It started at $58 billion. It's now at $62 billion. That's what we call Madison math. She says no bid contracts, but she voted for a no-bid contract for the train that's going to go between Milwaukee and Madison. She says no more earmarks, but she voted for $39 million of earmarks. It's saying one thing here in a debate, but doing something else in Madison. That's not the kind of representation we need. But in regard to bipartisanship, that's a nice segue. I believe it's both parties' fault. And I think when Republicans were in control, they excluded Democrats. And now that Democrats are in control, they're excluding Republicans. The bottom line is I think we have the best government when there's a balance of power. And there's a competition of ideas, and both parties need to work together, and the best ideas rise to the top. I am the only one that's sitting at this table that can bring bipartisanship and a balance of government to Washington, D.C. And if we have that balance and that competition of ideas, I do believe the best ones will rise to the top. I look at President Obama, and I'll say his education proposal is a good one, where we're working at giving incentives to schools to try new things that potentially might work. He just came out with something in regard to stimulating the economy, which was going to allow our businesses to write off their capital investments in the year in which they're occurred. I wish he would have done it 18 months ago, but I think that's a good idea. And it's those kind of ideas that I would support. But I think it's important that we work across party lines to advocate for ideas that will work for all of Wisconsin and for all of America.
Senator Alassa, you have 90 seconds.
Thank you. Well, I'm going to jump back to the last question. But the fact is, you know, my Republican opponent talks about mortgaging the future generation's future. Well, by, you know, giving tax breaks to millionaires and billionaires, he's creating an additional $700 billion to this budget deficit that we're going to have to borrow from China. I think that is the wrong direction to go in. We did cut the budget by $1 billion, so what you're saying is not true. And the fact is that we need to make sure that we do have more bipartisanship out in Washington, D.C., because all you do here is the party leadership yelling at each other and, you know, not getting serious about handling the difficult problems that we have facing this country. All they do is worry about partisan politics, and that needs to stop. You know, I've stood up to Governor Doyle, whether it was on our Second Amendment rights or if it was standing up to make sure that taxpayers, there was more accountability and transparency in my truth in state contracting legislation, to make sure that we were saving taxpayer money, that there was more accountability, and that we were saving lots of money for taxpayers going forward. But the fact is that I do believe that there needs to be more bipartisanship. I worked with former Ashland County District Attorney, who's now a Republican Attorney General, on provisions to protect children.
Senator Alassa, I have to interrupt you. We're running short of time, and we're into the closing statements. By the toss of the coin, you go first. You've got 60 seconds to sum things up.
Great. Well, thank you so much again, Glenn, members of the panel, for being here tonight, everyone who's in the audience as well as listening at home. I think that this is a wonderful opportunity for you to hear where the candidates stand on the issues that are important to you. And I think, you know, the difference in this race couldn't be more clear. The whole campaign, because of my background growing up in a middle-class family, growing up on a small family farm and also having my dad work shift work at a factory, you know, I learned the importance of middle-class values and what it takes to make a living in this state, in this country. And, you know, the fact that my Republican opponent doesn't understand that there are jobs leaving this state to go to other countries, to China, India, Mexico, and other places. He says it's not happening. Well, it is. Just not too far from here is Osceola, where Polaris is closing their plant and moving 400 jobs to Mexico. And they made millions of dollars last year in benefits, and they've left their workers behind. It's not the right direction for the state or country.
And Sean Duffy, you have 60 seconds.
And the chair of Wisconsin's Economic Development Committee, when Polaris left, was Senator Alassa. She has voted for job-killing taxes, $5 billion, voted to increase the size of Wisconsin government from $58 billion to $62 billion, and now we have deficits of $3 billion. We are in a poor situation here in Wisconsin, and I don't think those are the policies that we want to move from Wisconsin now out to Washington, D.C. If she's done it here in Wisconsin, she will do it again in Washington, D.C. Those are the wrong policies if we want to kickstart this economy. I believe in pro-growth policies that can set our job creators free to do what they do best, which is expand and grow, and from that they create jobs. And when they create jobs, we go back to work and we pay taxes. More money goes into the federal coffers, and from there we're able to reduce our debt. I believe that we can pass off a brighter future to our next generation, but we're not going to do it by taxing and mandating our job creators to death. Let's work together. Let's bring this country back, and I think we can do it with my time up.
And that concludes tonight's debate between Sean Duffy and Julie Lassa. Please, a warm round of applause for both of our candidates and for yourselves. Don't forget to vote on Tuesday, November 2nd. Good night, everybody.